This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, John Lucas, is the new head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, and Sixers fans are hoping he helps the team out of their slump. Lucas nearly lost his career to cocaine. After a promising start as the NBA's first draft pick in 1976, he started drinking too much and using coke. He was suspended 4 times and went through several treatment programs. In 1986, he gave up drugs and alcohol for good. He returned to basketball as a player and then started coaching. He bought a summer league team and turned it into a team for other basketball players in recovery. He also founded a chain of treatment programs. Lucas coached the San Antonio Spurs before taking over the 76ers. He told me about the final time he was barred from basketball. It was in 1986 when he was playing with the Houston Rockets.
March 12th, we played the Boston Celtics, and I got taken out for a technical foul, and I felt that my coach shouldn't take me out for a technical foul. And we lost the game, and I would begin to drink and use drugs again. And that night, I saw where my wife had locked the door. She used to lock the door and lock me in and take the key away. So we couldn't let people know with my public image that I was out still drinking, or it would have gotten back to my team. So this night, I had a suit on and 5-pair athletic socks, changing my clothes, and I saw the key in the door, and I ran to the door and got out the door, locked them in the house, and left. They followed me about a mile, and I ran lights until I got away from them, and I went into a blackout that night. And I remember coming out of it at 7 o'clock in the morning, downtown Houston, Texas, with soiled clothes, trying not to be recognized, with sunshades on at 7 o'clock in the morning. And that was when I knew I'd had enough. I was ready to seek some type of help. But I was a little too afraid to turn myself in and too afraid to ask for help.
I think it's hard for a lot of people to understand why so many athletes who rely on fitness, who rely on alertness to play, end up using drugs which hurt your body and hurt your physical abilities, hurt your alertness and your precision and all of that.
Well, I think the drugs that I use, and I think the drugs athletes use, are drugs that aren't in your system long, that they feel that are non-addictive, alcohol, a lot of beer. Cocaine at the time was a 72-hour drug. You play once a week. You're practicing. You sweat a lot. You feel you get it out of your system. All the myths of athletics that tell you that, you know, used to be a myth that you drank beer to put weight on to keep your weight on as an athlete. It's not true anymore. But, you know, what that does for me is that I never looked at my body as the way I made money. It was such a fine-tuned body athletically that 2 or 3 hours of abusing it didn't cause my play or deteriorate my ability to go down at any rate. So I was still at a very high level, but mentally I was whipped, and spiritually and emotionally I could not live. And that's what drugs and alcohol does. It doesn't affect the abilities. It affects your being.
When you started using cocaine, it also meant you were entering a world of drug dealers and dodging the law and jeopardizing your family because you were keeping cocaine in the house. Did that Was that aspect of it, you know, the underground aspect of it, disturbing to you?
No, I think that was what was exciting to me, was to being able to live on the edge. I know when I used to get involved and I knew I was going to get high, I used to get sweaty palms. It wasn't the excitement of doing the drug. It was the excitement of getting the drug. You know, going in areas you know you shouldn't have been in. And for an athlete, people bring them their drugs.
So you said it was exciting being on the edge and getting involved with this, you know, with this different type of person. Now, I mean, you came from a very middle-class family. Both your mother and your father were principals, I think, of schools that you attended. So you must have come from a very, disciplined family that had, you know, pretty serious ambitions for you. Was this a way almost to rebel against all of that?
No, I think I grew up as an adult athlete right away. I played in front of 20 thousands and thousands of people from the age of 10 years old till now. I mean, you know, it's just grew up as an adult athlete. I never grew up as a kid. So here I am, this star at 10 years old, being pampered, treated special from junior high school, college, and the professional ranks. And now all of a sudden there wasn't another goal to reach. Once I reached the NBA level, now it's over. I'm saying, where's the next goal? My goal was to live life. And what I got was I reached all these goals as an athlete, which is very competitive, very much what lures you into drugs. You know, that it, like, it's exciting, goal. It's an euphoria that the endorphins give you, like when you're playing a game, you get real excited. Well, that I kept getting that same endorphin high, in a sense, with the cocaine. So it kept going. What happened was it wasn't another goal to reach for me athletically. So now all of a sudden I'm like shut down because I don't know what to do. I expected to be dead at 35. My life was over.
So what made you decide to go public?
Ah, now that's a very good question. I, you know, if you're on drugs, you're a con artist.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on drugs, you are just a chameleon. You'll do whatever it takes to continue to use. The Washington Post's sports writer, a guy by the name of David Dupree, was writing an article about suspected drug use. And I said, well, I got to beat this. So I talked to my attorneys, and he said, well, what we'll do is go public. Say you're having a drug problem. So I said I was having a drug problem to beat his article, and we did the article with him, and we talked about my drug use. And people, and that night we had a basketball game in Washington. People didn't know how to respond to me.
So when you went public in 1980, did you see yourself as conning everybody by saying, well, I confess, I was a user, I don't do it anymore, and then secretly you were doing it?
Yeah, I said, I confess, now leave me alone.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, I told you what I'm doing, now let me go do it.
So that, in a way, gave you the opportunity to keep using.
Well, it gave me an opportunity to keep using, but I really didn't believe that was the problem.
What did you think was the problem?
I thought getting married was a problem.
Getting married?
I thought, see, all the disease I defined for you, I haven't had drugs in my system in almost 9 years. But I say I'm an addict and an alcoholic. What I have is a living problem. I can't live life on life's terms. So I have to accept what's given. And when I can accept that, I didn't get drunk anymore. I have what you call the poor me's. Poor me, my wife is getting fat. Poor me. Poor me, we having another kid. Poor me. Poor me, my coach wants me to show up at practice today. Poor me, it's raining outside. And the next thing I'm saying is, pour me another drink. Because all those are living problems. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, that's a living problem. And today, I have the same problems. But today, my living problems are different. My living problem today is about turning 40, going bald. If I can't accept them things, I'm going to get drunk again.
My guest is John Lucas. He's the new head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. He's written a new memoir called Winning a Day at a Time. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with John Lucas, the new coach of the Philadelphia 76ers and the author of the new memoir, Winning a Day at a Time. How did your parents accept what happened to you when you got your drug and alcohol problems when they realized it? And again, your parents... your parents were high school principals.
They retired.
They retired when they found out.
I think a lot of, my father was a very proud black man, and my mother was very proud, and he was the only black educator in North Carolina during the time in the early 70s. And at the end, I think that a lot of parents said to them, how can you suspend my kids? You're not doing such a good job with your own child. I think that they'll never tell me that, but I think that. But what that did was brought our family closer together than it ever has been. There's a lot of unconditional love in my family that wasn't there before. There was just a lot of respect. And I think sometimes people get confused with love and respect in a family environment. And I always respected and honored my father. He's my father. But I truly today love him, and I don't talk. You know, it's like you call your family every weekend because it's like that's what you're supposed to do. I call my family because I want to talk to them. You know, and that's a big difference. And I don't have to say anything. It's just the matter of hearing their voice. And I'm glad I got sober because my mother used to call all my friends and tell me, if you bother John or you're doing drugs, I'm going to turn you into the police.
When did they start doing
this? When I was in home, when I got suspended in 1980, early on, she used to try to follow me and get the license plates of all the cars that I was in and turn them over to the police. It's a lot of pain. And the person who's addicted doesn't realize that the family members are affected. You think you're just hurting you. My daughter, you know, she used to snort ashes imitating me. My son used to grab little cans of orange juice, hauling them his brews. It's a lot of pain. My daughter refused to go to school because the kids used to tell her dad is a druggie. You know, there's a lot of pain in that. And she never did any drugs.
So what was that point for you where you gave up trying to con yourself and con other people? And
March 14th, 1986. I said, I have had enough. I don't care if I don't ever play basketball again. I don't care if I don't have a job. I just want to get out of the pain. Because drugs and alcohol thoroughly kicked my behind.
I thought it was very interesting. In your book, you write that one of the most difficult parts of rehabilitation for you was accepting the idea of surrender.
It's a foreign concept to me as an athlete.
Well, it's your job to win.
Yeah, it's just like find a way to win. You know, instead of quitting, and that's why it took me so long. That's why that compulsion of the mind is sometimes called denial. Because what happens is, ever since I was 10 years old, find a way to win. This guy beat me playing tennis. I hit to his forehand, that's too much. Hit to his backhand next time. Michael Jordan, he's the greatest basketball player on the planet of the earth. You never hear an athlete say, Michael Jordan's the best. They say, I got to force him to his left. I got to get up on him. I got to get help. You know, nobody says, you know, that guy's just better than I am, and I need some help. You always hear a different side. Most people say, I'm looking forward to God, Michael Jordan. I'm looking forward to the child. And that's the athlete is within, and the competitive person that I am, it was like, let's find a way to win. Surrender.
So how did surrender finally come into play for you?
Well, somebody told me, he said, would you get in the ring with Mike Tyson for $10 million? I said, yeah. I said, I got in the ring with Mike, and I fought Mike in Las Vegas. Mike knocked me out first round. I said, oh, man, that hurt. And somebody said, Luke, you can beat Mike. We want you to fight Mike Tyson again in Philadelphia in 2 weeks. Will you fight him? We're going to give you $20 million. Yeah. Next time I get in the ring and I wear my Rocky shorts because I think it'll be different this time. And boom, in the first round, ding, boom, knocks me out again. I say, Mike hurt. I say, well, you want to beat Mike? I said, yeah. Well, don't get in the ring. You know, and that made a lot of sense to me. That one little analogy made a lot of sense. If you don't do drugs, you don't get drunk.
You've just taken on a new job. You're the new coach and head of the Philadelphia 76ers. So you've got to kind of prove yourself all over again in a different city now. I mean, I think that's right. Every time you start in a different place, you got to prove yourself all over again. And I mean, you've always had this, like all athletes, you know, winning and losing has been an issue for you. So is this a time of like particular pressure when there's all this pressure on you to win, but emotionally in your life, you're going through this thing, I'm sure, of having to transcend getting too emotionally upset if you lose?
I just got to not drink or do drugs.
Right.
And it's a win for me. Everything else is a gift.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I look at it. Taking this job, you know, people don't look at me as a coach. Now, they look at the first addict alcoholic to coach a major franchise. I'm just a coach. That's what I do. I today know who I am. I'm going to do the best that I can do. As an addict and an alcoholic, one of my character defects is perfection. I do want to win. I do want to be one of the very best. I'm aware of that. I just want to do the best that I can do and then leave the results up to other people. It's not that important to me. I'm here about building quality men, character within our men that play basketball for us, and we'll win basketball games. I want them to believe in themselves and care about one another. And if I don't ever win a championship, but we put out quality people for our city and community, it's a win for me.
As a coach, how do you deal with it if you suspect, but you're not sure, that a player on your team has a drug problem?
No, I don't hesitate. I speak my mind, and then I can be wrong. You know, I'm not one who's afraid because I know where I've been. And I think that they know that I sincerely care about who they are and that my stance is all I've been through, I really probably might want to help you rather than damage or hurt you. And now that I'm really on the management side now, not just a player like working outside the league and just work, I'll go to anything to help any player. I know this last year with Phoenix, they had a player that got into trouble who came to me and asked for help, and I went and helped him. The Phoenix Suns team said, you know, that may be a conflict of interest. He's been able to talk to our players, and I can't. And I got real tickled because I said, anytime, first of all, I'm an alcoholic. If someone comes to me needing help about that, I've got to help. That's my service work.
So what are your goals for this year with the 76ers? Any change, big changes you want to make?
To make us a community-involved basketball team, establish some identity within our city. We don't have any that we need to have as being a professional team. To reinstall the faith of our fans back into Philadelphia basketball. To have our team a part of the community. And to put a product on the floor that competes every night.
Well, I wish you good luck.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on your show.
John Lucas is the new coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. His new memoir is called Winning a Day at a Time. This is Fresh Air.